looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, C-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, AceTicket.com, WFXT TV, and Mohegan Sun. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And they will make you pay up and down the lineup. There's a shot down the line, hook to the corner, and Mookie Betts once again starts a ball game with a big fly, and the Red Sox lead it 1-0. Just as he did the other night against Ohtani, that's home run number 6 for Mookie.
So, you know, I don't know that I've ever told you this, Jim Murray, or that you Red Sox fans, I don't know that I've ever told you this either. There are words that I have that I like to live by. Okay, there are words that I have that I like to live by. If you're not worrying, you're not living. My personal two cents. If you're not worrying, you're not living. There always has to be something to worry about. It's sort of what keeps us going. It's what motivates us. And again, sort of gives you that drive, that edge. If you're not worrying, you're not living. Not a good sign. So, of course, with me, there's always something to worry about. Of course there is. We'll open up the phone lines right away. 617-779-0985. Red Sox are 16-2. It's ridiculous. It really is. It's ridiculous. When you look at it, they go to the Angels. They show up there. They're 13-2. They win 10-1, 9-0, 8-2. They outscore the Angels 27-3 in the three games out there. They are now 16-2. And so I asked this to Jimmy Stewart, our producer, off the air. Murray, I don't think I mentioned it to you, so ponder it for a second. But at the moment, given the start of the Red Sox, And what is not to like? Really, it's hard to find holes at the moment. I mean, they're doing everything right. They lead the American League in runs scored. They've allowed the third fewest runs. They're hitting home runs now on a regular basis, Murray. And did you know that they have struck out less than any team in the league?
I did not know that.
So not only are the Red Sox hitting for power and scoring runs, they're not striking out on top of it. It's like, They are borderline the perfect team here in the early part of the year. And their starter's ERA is under 2. Last year, Corey Kluber, and that's the whole rotation. Corey Kluber won the Cy Young Award last year with an ERA of, I want to say, 2.25, something like that. So what the Red Sox have done on a nightly basis is send a starting pitcher to the mound who's actually better than the reigning Cy Young Award winner in the American League, if you think about it in those terms. Really, unbelievable what that team has accomplished so far. And so let me ask you as a Red Sox fan, and we're going to get to a lot of stuff here in the course of the hour. I want to give you some statistics and numbers that put this start into context for you, if you didn't know it already. Because 16-2, and it's really 16 out of 17. Because, boy, that opening day loss, blowing that lead late. Boy, that is now erased from our memory from forever. 16 out of 17 they've won. But my question is then, should we erase that game on opening day? And when you look at them and try to look at them objectively, okay, they're not going to win three-game series by a combined 27-3 all year. We all know that. So try to look at them objectively and say, well, this still worries me. This is an area you have to keep an eye on. What area, and we had a bunch of them going into the year. You know, would J.D. Martinez be the guy? Would David Price be healthy? And it's still early for Price. All of those things going in. The infield defense, which overall has been pretty good. The Red Sox have not made an error at shortstop yet, for example. Xander Bogaerts got hurt. Holt has played there. Lynn has played there. No errors at shortstop. I think they're only one of four or five teams in baseball that has not committed an error at the position. Okay? So really, they're clicking on all cylinders. Everything is going right. So if I were to ask you, Murray, what worries you still? What would you say?
Two things. The bullpen in high leverage situations, you know, because I can't erase what happened in that first game. So whether it's Joe Kelly, who I now know is a folk hero after everything that happened in that Yankee series and the brawl, and that was fun. But still, Joe Kelly in a high leverage situation in the eighth inning, no thanks. Same for Carson Smith or Matt Barnes. So, yeah, you know, going forward, I still think you're going to see some implosions there, and I certainly worry about that. Maybe they can trade for someone at the deadline, but right now, still concerned about the bullpen. And the other thing is old frigid fingers, David Price. And now I'm looking ahead, but is this going to be an issue come October? This team's obviously going to be there. But what's David Price going to be in cold temperatures? You know, ever since this whole thing with that happened here, he, you know, can't even get through two innings against New York. And fine, he had a decent start against the Angels. But still, I have to worry about David Price in cold weather. Those are the two things I'm concerned about right now.
And Murray, do you believe that they need Price to win a World Series?
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely do.
Yeah. Jimmy Stewart, what about you? What are you most concerned about?
The bullpen, as Murray mentioned, would be first. But secondly, this feels like a team that gets out to a lead and then they're fine. So my concern would be clutch and late situations for the offense. When a team's best pitcher comes out of the bullpen, because in the postseason it's about the bullpen, can this team get an important hit? It was nice that J.D. Martinez did that against the Yankees, but they still lost the game.
Okay, so what about
But that would be something that I would be worried about is clutch and late situations against bullpen aces.
So what about those late-inning comebacks they had on the homestand, Jimmy? Do you count those?
Not yet.
At least you're honest about it, yeah. I'll give you credit on that, but at least you're honest. So to me right now, it's the bullpen. It is still the bullpen. Boy, they've played some lopsided games lately. What a great way to mask that issue. You have such big leads that you don't even need a bullpen. You can just have, you know, what's his name? Marcus Walden? Is that his first name?
Yes.
He just got shipped out a day.
He's gone. Drew Pomeranz has been activated.
He's going to screw this whole thing up, Maz.
But the, you know, you can pitch Marcus Walden in these games because you're ahead by so much. So for the health of the Red Sox long term, it would be nice to see some of these guys in the late innings, the pitchers, to me, get put in some spots where they got to get key outs. Because now, look, Tyler Thornburg might be the guy, but again, I do worry about the late innings and the bridge to Craig Kimbrell, if that's what you want to call it. 617-779-0985. We'll go right to the phones here. Scott's in Bellingham. Scott, what do you got?
Hey, Tony. Hey, Jim. What's going on, guys? I just wanted to get your opinion on something. I'll ask my question and hang up. Celtics got off to a 17-0 start, you know, red hot. Then they kind of fell back to earth. They finished second in the conference. Can we expect the same kind of pace from the Red Sox? Do you think these guys are for real, or do you think, like the Celtics, they might tail off?
Well, Scott, look, the sports are different, right? And if I'm not mistaken, the Celtics were also 16-2. I think they lost the first two and then won 16 in a row.
Right.
So I just think the sports are different, and the Red Sox are obviously going to start losing. Okay, and when I say start losing, winning 6 out of 10, going 6-4, is an exceptional achievement. 16-2 is just downright otherworldly, and it's just not realistic. So, and again, if you factor in the opening day loss, they've won 16 out of 17, which I'm going to give you a stat on in a minute. But that brings us to Juan in Salisbury, who may touch on the same thing. Go ahead, Juan.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, man. You guys have the best show in the air by far. I actually have a comparison. I want to know if you remember back in 04, coming out of the All-Star break, the Sox, they were kind of slumping a little bit, and Manny Ramirez went off for about a month straight and started off this big win streak, but they were just winning series after series on the way to the World Series that year. And this team is trying to remind me a lot of that team back then. And also, my question was, with all these starting pitchers that we have right now, pitching so well with Velasquez and that other guy there, sorry, I'm missing his name. But with Pomeranz coming back tonight, and if he pitches well, do you think we'll go to a 6-man rotation or stick with the 5?
Okay, so Juan, I'm sorry, I let you go. I'm just going to try to get to as many people as possible here. So, you know, we had a short show last night, and the Red Sox are obviously playing out of their mind, so I know a lot of you want to talk about them. But the comparison to 04, see, I always get a little agitated when people talk about 04 because I remember that team inside out. I covered that team, and I was there every day, okay? And so they did not play well immediately after the All-Star break. And a lot of people like to say that the fight with the Yankees and Jason Varitek, you know, and A-Rod turned that season around. It didn't. They played 500 for, like, the next 8 days. And then they made the deal at the deadline and traded Nomar. And everybody said that immediately turned them around. And it didn't. It wasn't until August 15th that the Red Sox really caught fire, at least after a good start. Now, I thought he was going to compare the start of the team to 04. And Jimmy, if I remember right, they started that, and I asked Jimmy to look this up, and I haven't looked. But my recollection is they started that year 14-5. So you check it and tell me whether I'm right.
14-6.
Okay, 14-6, so I missed by a game. I also know they went to New York, I think, early in the year and swept the Yankees in a three-game series at New York.
That is correct.
Okay. So to me, that team was out to make a statement early. They came out of the gate 14-6, and then they basically played 500 for a good chunk of time. Then they made the acquisitions at the deadline, and in their final 46 games of the regular season, they went 34-12. You add in the postseason, in their last 60 games, they went 45-15. And at one point during that stretch, they won 16 out of 17. They went 16-1 over a 17-game stretch, just like this team has done. That is the last time the Red Sox played this kind of baseball. And that 04 team, that 04 team in the second half of that year, and really from August 15th on, was by far the best baseball I have ever seen the Red Sox play. Okay? This stretch here, though, to start a year, I think is incomparable. Obviously, look, it's only happened a handful of times in the history of the game, period, going back to 1900, 1920, or whatever it is. So this is extraordinary. So I don't think it's a stretch to say this is the best we've ever seen them early in the year. But we all know it's not sustainable. We all know they still have holes. And the question is whether those holes will come back to bite them in the ass. 617-779-0985. We'll get to your calls, your assessment of the Red Sox. We'll give you some of the key matchups in this game tonight with Oakland. All of that. And an interesting comment from Buck Showalter concerning Mookie Betts and the start he's off to. We'll do that next, too.
Here's the thing I find most amazing. Baseball gets caught up.
You don't quit on your team.
When you want to win, play through anything.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
2-2 to Benintendi. High fly ball with a carry. Deep right. And back is at number one. Yes, sir. Benintendi with his first of the year. You knew that was just a matter of time. The Red Sox hit their 11th home run of the series. Back on top by two.
Andrew Benintendi getting into the act last night, too. That was actually a reasonably close game for a while there. I think it was 3-2 going into the seventh.
No grand slams. They're done, Tony.
I know. Yeah, they're cooling off, Jimmy. No grand slams. They're cooling off. Down to a 36 grand slam pace, the Red Sox are. But now Benintendi hits his first home run. Did Dave O'Brien say there are 11 home runs in the series? Is that right? 11
home runs. Right, yeah.
I mean, they hit six in the first game. So I think it was 6-3-2. 11 home runs in the series against the Angels. I asked the question at the beginning of the program tonight. What worry do you still have about the team? Because be honest, okay, they're not going to beat everybody 27-3 in a three-game series. They're just not. So where is the vulnerability? What would you like to see them shore up? And to me, and I'll give you an example too. Murray and I were looking this up during the break in 2002, and a lot of people forget this. The Red Sox started out 27-9 that year. That was the first year under the new ownership. Grady Little was the manager. Mike Port was the general manager. They got off to a fabulous start. And then in the final 105 games, I think they went like 53-52. And they finished with 93 wins, and they missed the playoffs by six games. Okay, the Angels were the wild card team that year. If I'm not mistaken, that was the year the Angels won the World Series. And the Angels won 99 games and finished second. Okay, Oakland won the West that year. So it's a fabulous start, but it doesn't mean that the issues are gone. They've just been masked. So again, I ask the question, what are you most worried about? Jeff is in New Hampshire. Jeff, what do you got?
Hey, Tony. I'm worried about the infield defense and the base running, giving away outs and giving extra outs. You already hit the bullpen. But I had a question for you where you think you've read the Yankees wrong. I feel like Cashman neglected his rotation just like Dombrowski neglected his bullpen, and that they're still too much a Yankee Stadium team and not a road team. I'll let you talk now.
So, Jeff, look, you might be right about the Yankees, and not getting Gerrit Cole may prove to be a huge mistake there. They could use Gerrit Cole. But I also think I wouldn't completely judge the Yankees yet. I'll say this. I am more convinced by how the Red Sox, let me rephrase, the Yankees' problems worry me more than the Red Sox' strengths. If I'm assessing both objectively, Yankees have played some really bad defense. And when you have power hitters the way they do in the middle of the lineup, there's always the chance that your team will be a little bit too much of a softball team. And if that happens, they've got problems there. Because you still have to have athleticism. And this Red Sox team right now, this Red Sox team is a good blend. Al is in Rhode Island. Al, go.
Yeah, hey, guys. I mean, I'm not sure you can really be worried about anything given the start that they've had. And at this point, I mean, it would be a travesty if they don't make the playoffs.
Al, that's not true. That is not true. Right now, they're 14 games over. If they play 500 the rest of the year, they only win 88 games.
Well, I got that, Tony, but they're 14 games over 500 with 18 games played. So what makes you think that they're going to play 500 baseball the rest of the way? I mean, they're obviously underperforming if that's the case. And listen, they're doing this. They're showing their depth right now because they're out their middle infield. And I think the keys are on from the pitching staff. If Porcello gives you 80% of what he's given you already, this team's in really good shape. And if Hanley can maintain some of the good start that he's off to, I think they're in great shape. And then you've got some bonuses. If Bogaerts comes back and can pick up where he left off before he got hurt, this team's in great shape.
Okay, but how many ifs? How many ifs are you going to give me? This is what I'm saying. Listen, I'm impressed by the start, too. They've played 18 games, though, Al.
Well, of course, Tony, but what are you going to judge them on? You can only judge them on what they've played so far. And you've also got a guy like Tyler Thornburg. If he comes back, that really solidifies the bullpen.
Okay, Thornburg has never pitched a game for the Reds. See, this is where I think it gets stupid. And this is where I start to get irritated. We're all impressed by the start. So you say it's a travesty if they don't make the playoffs? Well, then don't watch until October. Because to me, if you look at them realistically, nobody goes 16-2 and beats teams 27-3. Don't tell me there are no problems. There is no perfect team. It doesn't exist. So just wipe that from your mind immediately. I'm trying to have an honest discussion with you about what areas do you look at as potential problems. You say none, and then you say if Bogaerts comes back, if Pedroia comes back, if Porcello can give them 80% of what they got, if Hanley can keep it up, to me that sounds like four potential problems. You're just assuming they're all going right. So, let's not get crazy over it. That's all. That's all. They're playing great. Great. They lead the league in runs. They've allowed the third fewest. I mean, there's not much to pick at the moment. But don't tell me there won't be long-term. That's crazy. CJ's in Dorchester. Go ahead.
Yeah, my main concerns, I think I'm worried that Alex Cora might try to get a little bit cute and might start doing some substitutions and some pitching changes late in the game because they're doing well. The base running is always a problem. And honestly, if your core guys get back, Pedroia and Bogaerts, how are they going to look? You know, and he's got to give those jobs to them, or you would think he would. I'm worried about sticking them back into play. I do have a question for you, too.
Go ahead, because actually, CJ, I think This is a great question that you have, and keep going.
The question I had was more about when do we start thinking about paying some of the homegrown talent, and that's also a concern of mine, too, is that these guys, Devers, Benintendi, Betts, when their contract's up, they're going to demand a lot of money, assuming they're playing the way they do. You can't possibly pay all those guys.
Okay, so your comment line says Mookie Betts contract extension. And I'd like to focus on Mookie here specifically for a minute. When Betts is going like this, going the way he's going right now, boy, man, is he fun to watch. He really is. He's a dynamic player and fun to watch when he's going like he's going right now. Now, again, I said this last night, and I'm never going to change my mind on this unless Mookie Betts changes as a player, which I don't anticipate. But Betts, to me, particularly at Fenway Park, you can minimize the damage he does to you as an opponent if you pitch him right. Okay, he can't hit the ball out to right center and right field. It's not his fault. It's a limitation, a physical limitation as a player. But as long as people keep throwing him fastballs middle in, like the Angels did in this series, and he did hit one breaking ball out in the 3-home run game. But if they keep throwing him fastballs, he'll hit 40 homers, let alone 30 again. We know he can run, he can hit for average, he can play defense, all of it. They've tried to sign Mookie Betts already. He said no. They offered him 5 years and $100 million a year ago. He said no. I look at that offer now and I laugh at it. $20 million a year for Mookie Betts? Way too low. Way too low. If he's playing the way he's playing now, he's easily a $30 million player, especially when Bryce Harper and Manny Machado end up getting $40 million or close to it this coming offseason. So Mookie's going to get paid. So if you want to say one of your concerns is how are they going to keep this all together, if you like this group, and I'm not telling you that you should yet, because I think there's still some hurdles to clear. We need to find out, for example, if they can win in October. But if you like this group, there's a chance it's going to come apart sooner rather than later. Chris Sale is up at the end of next season. David Price can opt out now. Kimbrell's up at the end of the year. Pomeranz is up at the end of the year. And then going forward after that, Bogarts, Benintendi. Benintendi's way down the road. Bogarts, Betts are going to come up for free agency and more arbitration. So those numbers are going to skyrocket. And Bradley's going to be a free agent, I think, at the end of next season. And if you don't care about Bradley, I don't blame you. I'd let him go, too. But again, just something to consider in the bigger picture. 617-779-0985. When we come back, I'm going to tell you what Buck Showalter, manager of the Orioles, said about Mookie Betts. And we'll get to more of your calls.
We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporter. Tony Mazzarotta, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Before we get back to your calls and to Mookie Betts, I want to get to Mookie Betts. The big matchup of the game is brought to you by Big Y World Class Market. As I mentioned, Drew Pomeranz making his season debut tonight against the Oakland A's. And Pomeranz typically does better against right-handed batters than lefties. That big curveball of his seems to fool righties more because, and this is not terribly uncommon, but right-handed batters can often quit on it. Nonetheless, the guys had the most trouble with in that Oakland lineup, Jed Lowrie. Remember him, Jimmy? Jed Lowrie?
Smartest guy in the room.
So Stanford guy. He was one of those.
He'll tell you that, too.
Yeah, he was arrogant. He had that Stanford arrogance to him. No two ways about that.
How'd that work out for him?
But Lowrie from the right side of the plate's a good hitter. Always has been. Has more power from the right side. A surprising power from the right side. Against Pomeranz in his career, 4-for-8 with a homer. And 5 walks. So that's what? 9 times in 13 plate appearances he has reached pace against Drew Pomeranz. So I would suggest keeping an eye on Jed Lowrie in terms of key matchups in that game for Pomeranz tonight. Before we get back to your calls, Buck Showalter said today to Mike Lupica of MLB.com. Apparently this was not a broadcast interview. But Showalter said about Mookie Betts, "I've told anyone who will listen, he's the best right fielder I've ever seen in person." In person, okay? He continues, "The dynamic he creates for them defensively in right field at Fenway is a big advantage for Boston. Special player. Game changer. The term 5-tool player is used loosely, but it aptly describes him. One of my most favorite players in our game." That's what Buck Showalter said about Mookie Betts. And so here's what I would say. Showalter qualifies it a little bit. He says it that I've ever seen in person. But let me ask you, who's a better player, Mookie Betts or Bryce Harper?
Bryce Harper.
I mean, I think you get a lean Harper there, don't you?
It's pretty close at this point, especially if Mookie Betts is going to continue to, you know, to tear it up the way he has so far. But yeah, I got to go Harper. There's so, more power there.
I think it's Harper, but Mookie Betts plays every day. Harper's had a history of injury, so it's closer than I think we think.
Okay, so all I'm saying about Harper, Jimmy, is Harper's a right fielder. And I don't, you know, I have to believe Showalter has seen Bryce Harper. The Orioles and Nationals play each other in that interleague thing. You know, that's their little rivalry game, right? So Showalter, and look, I'm not taking anything away from Mookie Betts. Showalter's one of these guys who's a blowhard a little bit. He probably likes Mookie better than he likes Bryce Harper, because Bryce Harper's a dink. So you want to factor in clubhouse stuff, things like that. Maybe Betts is a better guy on a team. But the best right fielder he's ever seen? Like, okay, you know, let's not just ignore the fact that
you're going to be a bear, Maz, be a Grizzly.
Okay, I'm just getting it out there. Back to your calls. Anthony's in East Bridgewater.
Tony, how you doing?
Good.
I'm really concerned at this point that you may just jump off a bridge before you admit that this team might actually be good. And I understand this feels a lot like 2013 to me. I don't know if it feels like that to you.
They're better than that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was curious now, and I was going to talk about the World Series expectations, but I really think now we have to talk about contracts. Do they extend Sale before the end of this contract? Do they go out on a limb for him at like $25 million a year? And in that case, who gets left off? It's got to be Betts over Harper at this point for the Sox, right?
Betts over? What do you mean who gets left off? You said Betts over Harper. Who are you talking about?
If they decide to pay Betts as opposed to paying somebody like Harper.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. I didn't follow your logic. We were just talking about Bryce Harper. I didn't understand your logic. Yes, I think the first goal would be to pay Mookie Betts. The first goal would be to pay Mookie Betts. You know he can play here. You know it works. So not that Bryce Harper would have any issues. The first thing you do is pay Mookie. As for Sale, you could certainly go to him now, but honestly, why would you? So I worry about Sale and his arm falling off. I worry about that with every pitcher. So you have him for this year and you have him for next year. Why? And to sign him up, give him what you gave Price, what's it going to cost? Five more years and $150 million? I'm not even sure that's enough. So with a pitcher, I think I wait. I do. I think I wait. I don't even think about Sale's contract until the offseason. I start there. He's a bargain. You gave up prime prospects to get him. Use that to your advantage. Actually, hold on. I'm going to go to Tom in Brockton has a good concern with this team. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. The biggest thing I think the Red Sox have to face this year is on the opposite end of this, they've got a great winning streak going. If this team starts to slump, if they hit a losing streak, if they end up having a slump, how will this team turn themselves around? How does Cora move this team forward in a positive direction?
Okay,
that's, I think, this team's biggest thing.
So, Tom, I want to focus on the Cora part of that. And I'm not concerned about him getting them in a good place in terms of the vibe. I think Cora is going to have an ability to do that. I think we're already seeing that. But what I do have a question about is how do you know how he'll manage and respond in a big situation? How do you know that?
Well, Tony, I don't. That's the biggest fear that I think the Red Sox have to face right now. I mean, right now, lightning's in a bottle. Cora can't do anything wrong. The Sox can't do anything wrong. But moving forward in the tight playoff situations of October or August or whatever it is, how will this team fix the problem moving forward? That's the biggest fear the Red Sox are going to have to face.
Okay, so look, I think the manager's a good one. Again, you have a rookie manager. And Cora himself admitted that he's going to make mistakes. He said that in the interview we did with him the other night. Chris in Wilmington, go ahead.
Hey, Tony, thanks for taking my call. Speaking of that, Cora, right? Do you think the hitting has come along because of a relaxed atmosphere, or do you think it might have the fact that J.D. Martinez is protecting Hanley, like Ortiz and Manny? Do you think that combination is affecting how we're hitting?
Well, sure, yes, it's affecting them, but I don't think it's a protection thing. I think Hanley doesn't need protection when he's right. He doesn't. And Hanley right now is, or at least for the start of the year, Hanley has been dynamite. So everything that was sort of an if or for the Red Sox here in the early part of the year, just about everything has broken their way. With the exception of the eighth inning, okay, that thing, and really that hasn't come into play too much because they've been ahead by so much. But Sale has looked good despite the change in program. Price has looked good despite the one game. Porcello has been off the charts good. Bogarts came out swinging a good bat. Betts is playing at a like Mr. Universe, for crying out loud. Martinez is now hitting. Hanley has been good all the way around. They're getting something out of Devers. Now Benintendi's hitting. Even Bradley's swinging the bat a little bit. Everything has broken their way here in the early part of the year. Everything. So, again, all those things that you could look at with the team and say, if this happens, if that happens, generally speaking, they've all gone in a positive direction. And they're 16-2. But in the long term, don't tell me they're not going to have problems or that you don't foresee them. Because we all do.